Good afternoon and everyone to the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, December 20th, 2021. This would be our last meeting for this calendar year. As you know that we do have interpreters on this call with us. So I would request that when you make comments, please state your name. It helps them doing their job well. Anyone who listens to the meeting on the phone call and anyone who listens to the recording, it also helps them knowing that this, knowing who the speaker is at the time. And as you know that this meeting is being recorded, we do place meeting audio on our website. Anyone who is joining this meeting via phone calls, you can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the speaker icon that will mute or unmute yourself. And to raise, if you'd like to make comments, if you go under reactions, click on the raise hand icon that will raise or lower your hands, virtual hands. That tells us that you intend to speak and we can have one speaker at a time. At this point, I would also say that anybody who would like to make some public comments, you can either send me a chat message and I can put you on the list, or when we begin the public comment section, please raise your hands and we can have the comments in the order that we receive. Madam Chair, if you would permit, I can read the agenda out loud before taking the roll call of the AAC members. That might give them a minute or two additionally if they're just still joining in.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. For today's Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, the agenda is as follows. After I finish reading the agenda, we would take the roll call of the AAC members at 4:05. On the schedule, we have review of today's meeting agenda and minutes from prior meeting minutes. Both will be approved. At 4:10, we have customer service and outreach reports. At 4:15, we have the Michael Wilson Award, the AAC Metro Access Safety Award, and the Rush Award. The Rush Award, just to remind everyone, has been referred to until the time we go back to in-person meetings. At 4:25, Mr. Blake will provide updates for shared rights and abilities right. At 4:50, we have a discussion of MAC's subcommittee performance report measures, also by Mr. Blake and or Ms. Terrian Williams-Hall. At 5:05, we have a committee discussion about WMATA budget, Metro Access Fares. At 5:25, we have a review of Metro Access inclement weather policies, again, either by Ms. Terrian Williams-Hall and or Ms. Allison Anderson. At 5:35, we have public comment section and the meeting will adjourn at 6 p.m. That concludes the agenda for today's meeting. At this point, I would, Dr. Paulson, did you have any comments? I see your hand up.
Yes, I would like to add something to the 4:25 item. When Mr. Blake is discussing shared rides and abilities ride, is a discussion of the current vaccination policy for drivers in Metro Access because of the new type of variant that's floating around Maryland and DC and Virginia.
Okay, sure. We can surely amend the agenda at that time. excuse me. I would take roll call of our committee members. So please confirm your presence. Elver Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy. Rico is on the call with us.
Yes, present.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher. Marcy Goldstein. Melanie Henderson. Steve Kaffin. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazel.
Present. I'm
okay,
here.
Mr. Mangrum. Okay, thank you. Philippa Mazel. Anthony Oberg. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semelfort.
Here.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Ted Simonoff. Okay, that. Apologies. That concludes the roll call for today's meeting. At this point, Chair Summerford, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you, everybody. Good afternoon to the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting for December that ends this year. And this has been quite a year here. So the first thing we're going to do is review of the agenda here. Besides this full plate agenda, is there any other topics people need to cover, even though we may not have time for it? Let me know now.
Chair Semaphore, there was a recommendation. This is Anu. I apologize. This is Anu. There was a recommendation from Dr. Posner. Dr. Posner, would you like to state that, restate that?
Go ahead, Dr. Posner.
Yes, that was during Mr. Blake's discussion of the shared rides and abilities rides. He also discussed the current policy on vaccination and testing for drivers, because of the new variant that is currently very active in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia.
So is that a, okay, so that will be discussed? Okay. All right, so I guess we're going to move the, can someone move the agenda as is?
So moved.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
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 Nays, abstentions. The motion carries to move the agenda as is. The minutes from the November meeting, is there any, additions?
Excuse me, Paul, we only have six members that have said they are present.
Oh, okay. There's only six people to move with. Oh, wow. I guess we'll hold the freeze on that until we see more people.
Well,
all right.
All that said it present when she called the roll call.
Deborah Fisher is here. She didn't. Seven. I think you might have seen that. So I think we've got seven. What is the quorum?
And there's no quorum. We can go on with our business. It is committee of the whole, and we have sufficient representation of Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. So we can go ahead and approve minutes.
Oh, okay. So we can go ahead. Hearing the crickets, is there any changes to last minute's minutes? Can I get a motion to move the minutes as is from November?
I'd like to make a motion, Vanessa.
Go ahead.
That we move the meeting. I mean,
the minutes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we're going to move November minutes as is. All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays. Abstentions. We're moving the November minutes as it stands. So next on our wonderful agenda, let me see. Let's go ahead with the customer service and outreach reports, Ms. Anderson and her wonderful team members.
Good afternoon, everyone, and happy holidays. At this time, I'd like to present Kay Clark, if she's on the call, to give us our information from our last session on the public comment resolution.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Ms. Anderson, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm also happy holidays. There actually were no outstanding public comments to be addressed from the last month of November, but I will be reporting the Metro Access commendations for the month of November for all providers. One moment. Starting with First Transit, it had 47 for the month of November. TransDev had 78, 54 for the MVOCC, 42 for Challenger, 79 for Diamond, and one for the Abilities Ride, with a total of 301 for the month of November. And this concludes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Also, in regards to outreach, we, again, during this pandemic time, have not been going out and conducting formal outreach. However, we have definitely been on top of any reports or inquiries coming through the various offices in order to make sure that those issues get resolved. So that would conclude our outreach report for this session.
Thank you so much. All right, for both of those. Next is going to be awards. Ms. Anderson, are there any to give out for December?
Absolutely. I'm glad this afternoon to present our partner, TransDev, and they will be recognizing one of their team members for the Michael Wilson Award, as well as the AAC Safety Award. TransDev.
Good afternoon, good evening, everyone, and happy holidays to you all as well. I believe I will start with the Michael Wilson Award winner. Mr. Derek Rakes should be on the call. And Derek, if you're on, after I'm done, we'll give you 30 seconds to respond to what I have to say and to share with us whatever you'd like to share. Mr. Rakes was born on January 3rd, 1974 in Annapolis, Maryland. He's happily married to his wife, Tamika. They've been married for 5 years and have a daughter by the name of Jordan. Mr. Rakes graduated from South High School in Edgewater, Maryland in 1992. And immediately entered the workforce, where he spent 15 years with United Van Lines traveling across the US. Mr. Rakes joined the Metro Access family back in March of 2018 as an employee with TransDev. We have affectionately named him our gentle giant due to his large stature, but meek and inviting spirit. Derek is a mild-mannered, easygoing person, and he's very friendly, very friendly disposition. He's articulate and is best known for his meaningful impact in an array of conversations with other coworkers. He doesn't talk much, but when he does, his words are full with all types of wisdom that stays with you well after the conversation is over. Derek is exceptional. He has exceptional customer service skills. He enjoys knowing that his customers are well satisfied, and he loves to serve and do that professionally. Mr. Rakes, in his own words, would like everyone in attendance to know that he takes his job very seriously. He takes pride in what he does. And he wants to give the customers the best every day. In closing, he wants us to know that it doesn't matter where you come from, it's about where you're going. When Derek is not working, he enjoys spending time with his family and loves to watch all sports. Derek, if you're on, you can chime in now.
Hey, everybody's doing. I want to thank everybody for this award, especially our management team for this acknowledgement. And I let them know that I really appreciate this. And they make it easier for us throughout this hard times to, you know, come in with a positive attitude. So I appreciate you all. Thank all of my management and my coworkers.
Thank you, Derek. You can hang on and listen to me rave on about Mr. Sean Smart if you like. All right. Our safety award recipient is Mr. Sean Smart. Sean is one of my island brothers. He was born in the small country called Guyana back in March of 1971. He's much younger than I am, though. Mr. Smart landed at BWI Airport over 20 years ago and remained in Maryland since his arrival. He's been married to his lovely wife, Alexis Smart, for 4 years. They have one daughter named Chandel, who recently graduated from Duval High School. Mrs. Smart attended and graduated school in his native Guyana. Sean joined Metro Access back in 2009 as an employee with MV. He transitioned over to Transdev when we took over the contract in 2013. Sean is one of those employees that stand out, but doesn't stick out in the workplace. He uses his positive attitude to encourage others to work hard. On the road, during his workday, Mr. Smart treats his passengers with care, compassion, and the same way he would handle his daughter as a baby and throughout her teenage years. With care, Mr. Smart provides all his passengers with support they need, especially when their life seems to be more than they can handle. Sean has demonstrated customer service that goes above and beyond, even on days when he himself has experienced life-changing events. Mr. Smart has not had a preventable accident since 2016. He has not had a scorable drive cam event in the last 120 days. He has no valid safety complaints in over a year, and he has zero attendance issues. And he's currently in all safety-related training and requirements. Sean, in his spare time, loves to travel and spend precious moments with his wife and daughter. Soccer, cricket, and hobbies are hobbies that Sean enjoys, and plus spending time with his family. I know Sean is in the building. Sean, if you'd like to jump on and say a few words, we would really appreciate it.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, management. I really appreciate this, this recognition, it makes me really feel happy about it. And I thank you guys so much is to, you know, is to just looking out, is to just calling and, you know, being nice to me, all the workers. And I deeply appreciate that. And thank you all once more again. I will be here to, you know, work along with you all and, you know, share all my experience. So thanks again.
Thanks, Sean. And that is it from the TransDev team. Appreciate you guys giving us an opportunity to recognize these two outstanding individuals.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. And again, congratulations to Mr. Rakes and Mr. Smart. Job well done. We really do, from the Office of Metro Access Service, appreciate all that you do for the service and for our customers.
Right. Thank you so much with that. And without further ado, we're going to dive in our wonderful hot topics on this agenda. The first that will be facilitated with Mr. Blake to give us updates on is shared rides and ability rides. And Mr. Blake, we're also under shared rides. Most interesting to hear what is management's perspective as it relates to now with the Omicron variant. Full force, does that impact your decision about share rides? Go right ahead.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Am I on the screen? I don't know. Can you see or hear me? Okay.
We can see you.
Yeah, we can see and hear you.
Okay, great. Well, good afternoon. So, let's start at the beginning with the agenda item. So shared rides for the month of November came in at 28.5% of all trips were shared rides. So is that a lot? Not really, but given other circumstances, and we brought up the Omicron variant of the COVID-19, we haven't made a change yet. We're looking at where we're going with this. I'm listening to the scientists, I'm listening to the doctors, watching the Sunday morning shows and other things like that to get a feeling of where we are. So right now we're still keeping the shared rides and keeping them at a minimum. Again, 28%. And in November, I think we've been a hair higher than that so far this month because we've had more ridership. But what we're trying to do to compensate for that is to just continue to use the alternatives with the customers who've signed up and a few others as well, and spread the trips around. Is it possible if this becomes a circumstance where the science says that this particular variant is as contagious, if you will, in terms of the impact as the Delta was and spreads more rapidly, where we can reverse course on some things? Absolutely, and that's what we've been saying all along. But at the moment, again, I haven't seen any reversals from any public entities, local government, state government, the federal government, or in transportation entities specifically that state that because of this current variant, we Metro Access needs to go back to direct trips only. But it's definitely on the table and we're ready to act at any moment. Information comes to us that we need to go back and change the current policy. But right now, again, we're trying to keep shared rides to a minimum. Some trips are scheduled that way. Some are add-ons, as it was in the good old days, because as we declared a couple of months ago, or a month and a half or so ago, we're back to normal. And that's what we're trying to get back to. But we're trying to be normal with some restrictions in place as well. And tying to that, the testing requirements for the drivers remains as they have been now since September. drivers have to be vaccinated or they must submit to weekly testing to show that they are negative to, they're negative when it comes to a COVID vaccine test. So we're still testing. We're still encouraging vaccinations. And again, when it comes to shared rides, we're looking, but through our scheduling and planning process, we're keeping those to a minimum as well. And when it comes to Abilities Ride, which I mentioned earlier, despite the ridership not being at the pre-pandemic levels, we're using more Abilities Ride, thanks to all the customers who signed up, and again, some others. We're using more Abilities Ride than we did even when we were at our peak ridership, going towards 2.4 million trips. And the purpose of that, again, is to keep the number of people on the Metro Access vehicles to a minimum, not to make it a personalized transportation service, but it is still a shared ride public transportation service with minimal shared rides. And we're spreading customers out throughout these other alternatives. So we're working. Abilities Ride was designed initially, of course, as a way of helping the service be sustainable, save money, and give customers a benefit. As we've seen throughout this period, the program is flexible enough to allow us not to focus so much on saving money, but to focus on keeping customers spread apart so that we can minimize contact between customers. And of course, if you're not 6 feet apart from the drivers, you shouldn't be speaking to the drivers during the door-to-door or the securement process. So that's my kind of brief presentation on that subject, but I'm open for questions and comments and ideas.
So my first question is, and this is my own personal, okay, two things. So the first thing is, I just came from New York City, and they resumed shared rides on July 6th. Now, comparing apples to oranges, normally I'd be riding with someone, but for the past given the fact that in New York City, the Omicron variant unfortunately has doubled the positivity rate in over a week, to the point where I was there for 6 days and I have not seen a shared ride, which is bizarre. From them, but I think they've taken heed because I saw a lot of my trips going to similar like Abilities Rides car services. They use taxis, whatever, to keep the spread. And I think that is probably because of the high rate in New York City of concern and its transmissibility. That's why I bring the issue before here. You know, at what point may y'all consider that? That's, you know, one piece. The second piece, I've seen my observation of vehicles with customers since now we are share riding again, is I see not only the concern, but sort of the fear and the behavior that some I've seen in some customers is when I get on, you know, even though there's a potential, let's say for the new vans to have four people, a customer, I got on and the customer is saying, I'm sitting behind them, but he's like, I need 6 feet. And I said, sir, from the driver, very politely, there's no more 6 feet. There's up to three of us that can ride back here. But can you sit vertically across from me? I need space. So what I'm suggesting to management is I look up there at, the writing again, as I did last month, is you may want to use the IBVAR to educate customers, that the 6 feet no longer is there. Of course, you know, the customer was wearing a mask, but you know, what the reality is when we come to shared riding, they're very nervous. They're very concerned. I got asked to move across, you know, and with this person, I just did it anyway. But just those type of things are on customers' minds. They're really scared. Mm-hmm. And really concerned.
Well, I agree with that. And we are trying to educate customers. When the customer books by calling reservation agent or even when they're on hold, there is a message. Now, the only 6 feet reference in those message has to do with contact with the driver. Mm-hmm.
But the fact they're saying you need to stay 6 feet.
Yeah, but that's there's only so much. I mean, we can continue to enforce that message, and we try to tell customers that's the whole point why we can share rides, because there is no 6 feet mandate within a transportation vehicle, be it a bus, subway, airplane, or paratransit vehicle. Now, here is where it can get kind of tricky. There are some customers who have certain favorite seats on these vehicles if that seat is available when they get on board. Like after my couple of experiences riding on a Metro Access van, I know one seat I probably don't want to sit in. And I think I told Ms. Rush about that. But if that seat, if a particular seat is available and that customer wants to sit in that seat, and then you, let's say you or myself as a customer, gets on after that customer, even if it doesn't make the most optimal spacing, if I choose then to sit behind the customer because I don't want to sit in that seat in the corner with the bar, then, you know, that's your prerogative, that's my prerogative, and the customer in front of us just has to kind of accept that because I'm going to a seat that I choose to sit in. So we're trying to handle this delicately. This is public transportation.
Okay. I'm just saying, resources. Some of the observations I'm making, like I see customers more so now strangely asking the driver for either hand sanitizer. Obviously, they don't have that available to share. Or did you spray down the seat? It's just these are the behaviors I'm seeing more and more over the past couple of weeks.
And this is to be expected. I mean, a few weeks ago, we thought we were coming out of a pandemic. Now some may say we're not necessarily. But this, as the public becomes aware of various things, these are bound to come up. I know off topic, I go to church and I'm looking for hand sanitizer. So I get that. But as a public transit agency, there's some things we can provide and make available, and we can educate and inform the customers to the greatest extent. But I don't believe we're going to be able to, if you will, satisfy every single person's every single desire. Not in a shared ride public transit environment.
All right. And then with that, I'm going to, Ms. Rush has her hand up with questions.
But I do want to reiterate, and I don't want it to get past, and I'm watching, like I said, I've seen the data so far this month because of an increase in ridership. And maybe this is a signal to me I need to put more trips on cabs and these other resources. I've seen an uptick in the number and the percentage of shared rides, but that may go down as we tail off the rest of the month. But in November, again, we were 28%, just over a quarter of all our trips. And we're trying to keep that number to a third or so, but certainly nowhere near half of our trips are going to be shared rides. So we're doing our very best, even within a shared ride environment, to keep the service as single and direct as possible.
Because like I said, we're concerned about Omicron, how it's still, you know, being trying to find out yet how transmissible it is. But my observation is, even though I'm not a scientist, in New York City, it's exploding. To cause concern with paratransit there, to say, oh, everyone is going back temporarily to, you know, they haven't made that public announcement yet, but
for the sixth day.
Okay. I mean, they didn't make a public announcement, but and I would have known, but the fact I'm sitting there 6 days there with no shared rides at about 4 rides a day, that is bizarre. They're taking heed to the numbers.
Maybe they got my phone call about your trips.
Anyhow, Ms. Rush, go ahead. So Ms. Rush first, followed by Ms. Vanessa Coles.
Okay. I got a call yesterday about a passenger that when she got off of a ride, she got a call from, I guess, someone at Metro Access stating that her driver has been tested positive for the virus and that they have, you know, they know that he picked her up and, she needs to be tested and notified. So if you have a weekly test, do you check the temperature? I mean, weekly, you pick up a lot of people during the week, mm-hmm. and you only have one test a week. Do you check the temperatures every day?
So when I remembered, Mr. Blake, it was my understanding when I asked this last question, it was dependent upon the provider. So I guess we want to know, is it up to the provider to do that at their basis with their drivers at the beginning of the day, or is this something you've made mandatory now with all the providers?
So, yeah, each company has its own practice, but let's start with the phone call. Let's go back to the phone call. The phone call mm-hmm. is something we've been doing since the start of the pandemic. It's part of what we call contact trace. So mm-hmm. a driver informs us that he or she has tested positive for COVID-19. We get the customers who've traveled with that driver within the 12 days of the time that the driver tested positive, and we contact all customers to inform them. We do not tell them that they need to be tested. We say that this is information we're providing you in accordance with government guidelines and contact tracing, so that you and your doctor and family can make the best decision. If you've been feeling any symptoms, well, this could be a result. Even if you don't have any symptoms, but you have underlying health conditions and you just wanna go and get a test to be safe and peace of mind, that's up to you. If you feel just fine and you say, okay, that's okay as well. They don't have to share their decisions with Metro Access staff. And also, when we inform the customer, if the customer was on the vehicle 12 days ago, 5 days ago, 3 days ago, doesn't necessarily mean that's that day that the driver had COVID-19. So we're just going by the day that we get the date that it's reported, and the customer is then informed. Now, when you say about regular testing is only a requirement for drivers who are not vaccinated. So when you say weekly testing, only weekly testing for drivers who are not vaccinated. So a driver who we may call about may be a vaccinated driver who caught COVID. And we know that does happen. So that's when
this particular driver had not had his shots.
No, ma'am. No. That's not what it means. And now I'm not a medical doctor, but I've been studying this.
No. I'm not asking you. I'm telling you, this driver has not had his shots. And you know when I
how do you know that?
Well, I haven't said anybody's name. All I'm trying to do is get it straight in my mind what to expect or to tell the public so that they will know. I'm not accusing anybody. I'm not saying any names because you know I will drop a name.
Well, you can drop a name, but all I would say is if you know of a particular driver in this particular case, because we don't give the driver's name, we don't give so even when the customer gets the phone call, the only thing the customer knows is the gender of the driver so that they can get in their mind which trip we're talking about. But we don't give a customer the driver's name.
I know.
So how do you know which particular driver and his or her?
You know,
Here's my point. Vaccination at this moment is not a requirement. So whether the driver had his shot or not, the driver has to be regularly tested.
Not a requirement to drive the vehicle. That's all I'm saying. That's what I want to hear.
And we've been saying that not a requirement. Yes.
And it is not a it's up to the provider to do any kind of temperature checks or anything. That's all I want to know. That's what I want to hear you tell me.
Well, yeah. So, we've been saying that. I said, okay, let me go back to the beginning of my conversation. Drivers are required to either be vaccinated or submit to weekly testing, either or. Yes, that is
and
correct.
Don't have a guideline. It's up to their company on the policy that they provide for the driver to get the keys and start driving in the morning?
In terms of the type of tests and where the testing, but there is guidance from our procurement office to each provider to submit information to Metro.
All right, thank you. So how many drivers have, you know, I've asked this question before, how many drivers have had the virus?
How many drivers have had the virus?
Symptoms have been tested positive.
Okay, so let me come back and give you that number because those are different numbers. Those are not one and the same number. I can come back and give you a very good or very close, if not absolute accurate, estimate. But to just say how many
haven't gotten a number.
Okay, I don't remember this question prior, but I'll look into it. But I can tell you this. What I can do is tell you how many drivers have tested positive to our knowledge, therefore resulted in us engaging in contact tracing. That's the number I could be most accurate with.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So next is going to be Ms. Coles, followed by Thomas Mangler. Go ahead, Ms. Coles. Mr. Blake, before we go on, I think, were you going to give providers the opportunity to find out which ones does temperature checks or not?
Sure, they're on the phone. They can definitely answer that question, yes. Well, they're on the call.
Mr. Blake, this is Ronnie Worth. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
We do temperature checks at all three of our facilities and also ask a series of protocol questions pertaining to, you know, the questions pertaining to if they've been exposed to somebody that has COVID and things of that nature. But we do the temperature checks at all three of our locations.
Thank you.
That's Diamond National Express.
Correct. Thank you. Diamond.
Thank you.
All right. Who's next?
It's Conrad with TransDev. Well, we do the same as Diamond National Express.
Okay, thank you. Next.
Yes, hello. This is Marlon from First Transit. We're in the process now of getting the equipment to do it. We haven't, but as part of our positive check-in, we do ask the questions if they've been exposed or if they have symptoms. But we will soon be doing the actual temperature checks.
Okay.
And I believe Lev is Challenger.
Yes.
I guess that person's not on the call. All right, if you can find out the information, we appreciate it.
Okay, we'll do.
All right, so next, let's go back to Vanessa. You're up next, followed by Thomas Mangle. Go ahead, Vanessa. Okay.
Go ahead. So I wanted to follow up with my concern at the last meeting with the window thing, because I've had consumers come to me and I've experienced it. So I know this is for the sedan. I understand that it's a very close contact, very, you know, small space. So the drivers, from what I'm hearing, they're rolling their windows down halfway so that the air is blowing in the back with the customers. So there's a battle going on with that. So some I've had experience of, they will, you know, turn the heat up, but I guess they need to direct the wind back to the back because that has become a battle. So what is your suggestion for the consumer concerning this battle?
Yes,
so when it gets colder.
Yes, and what we've encouraged drivers, and it will be a challenge as the weather gets colder. I'm glad to hear that they are turning the heat up because that's part of the ventilation strategy. But part of what we're asking drivers, especially if the customer has expressed concerns or complaint, if you will, about the air coming back, is that instead of having the window, the driver's side front window open, we asked them, or we encouraged, to have the passenger side front window open along with the driver's side rear window so that the wind is blowing through in that diagonal away from the drivers, putting up like a sort of barrier between the driver and the customer without greatly impacting the customer. So service providers, I'll follow up with them, but you're hearing this, and we want to just continue to encourage, because it is cold. I mean, it was very cold this morning. So I could just imagine having that driver's side window air blowing right at me if I'm in the back rear passenger side seat. So to avoid that to the greatest extent possible, don't have to have the window all the way down, but as you say, halfway down, but with a competing and supportive airflow coming through or from the rear driver's side window, that should address most concerns.
So, and also because I experienced myself, a driver, she just didn't want to give me heat, and she wanted to roll the window down. So I was shaking the whole way. Going.
Now, one way we can address this, I mean, you've heard me just say it to the providers, and I'll follow up with them in our operations meeting and discuss it more directly, because it's the example of what I'm talking about, I believe, is in the file that Tino shared that became the start of our whole ventilation focus strategy. The other thing, and it's not a complaint, it's a legitimate concern, we would ask you to let Metro Access know this. Call the customer care line, inform us of that so we can talk to the driver and educate the driver one at a time.
Yes.
We all want to be safe, and I understand the driver's point of view, but there's a way through education to inform them that they can be protected even if it's not the window right next to them that's open. In fact, they can be even more protected because now you really keep creating a barrier between you and the droplets and other things of the customer.
Yeah, I didn't say anything to her because...
I understand. Yeah, I wouldn't debate the driver. I would ask kindly, and if the driver refuses to acknowledge your request and the education that myself and their management teams are going to continue to impart on them, it would be helpful as Metro Access Management to know who the driver is so that we can just continue to reinforce the education.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mangrum, you're up next.
Yes. My question is this. Sometimes the drivers tell you that they're not vaccinated. You don't have to ask the driver. The drivers just tell you sometimes. Mm-hmm. And some of the drivers, they have stuff with them to clean off stuff or what have you in the van to protect themselves and also to protect the customers or whatnot. And and since some of the drivers with the masks and stuff, some of them have a trouble trying to keep the mask on the whole time. So when they pick you up, they'll tell you, I got to stay outside the van for a little while because I got to try to breathe before I put back on this mask or what have you. So, and another question is, how often is the vans cleaned within a day? Because you could use the same vans for either shift. You got one shift, you got a driver using the van, you got another shift and the driver using the van. How often in the day is the van being cleaned?
Vans are clean, and that could be corrected if I'm wrong. Any of the service providers can correct me, but the vans are clean each time they come back to the base, and then there's a deep cleaning at night in preparation for the next day. But let me just ask the providers again. Robbie, why don't you give us a start and tell us about the cleaning process to ensure I'm saying this correctly.
Yeah, what you're saying, Mr. Blake, is correct.
The vans are deep cleaned every evening, and they're sprayed with a disinfectant that is approved by the CDC and the OSHA as far as what can be used. And then as far as vehicles that are operating during the day, when the vehicle comes back after its initial shift and there's a shift change, then that vehicle is cleaned as well before it goes back out for the second shift.
Okay, thank you. And is that a confirmation from First Transit as well as Transdev?
That is correct, from First Transit, that's correct.
And Transdev, can you confirm or deny?
Yeah.
Maybe he stepped out as well. We'll come back to him in a second. Mr. Marshall, he was on there. All right, we'll come back. But do you have another question, Mr. Mangrum?
No, no. But I'm glad with the drivers to tell me whether or not they vaccinated or not, because I could try to know how to keep myself away from the driver a little bit. You know where I don't, where I do know. So that's not a complaint that the driver's telling me or what have you. I'm glad that they do sometimes, because sometimes it's just volunteer information. You don't have to ask them nothing, they just tell you what have you. Because I think they want to protect you and they want you to know or what have you, which is a good thing. That's all I had to say.
All right. Thank you so much on this topic. Is there any other information you need to share, Mr. Blake, or put in summation to this?
No, other than we're trying to do everything we can to protect the drivers and the customers. Your health and your safety is our number one priority. And again, I'm certainly not above board in terms, I'm not above changing policy and going back. As you say, New York is probably practicing some of it, although they haven't announced it. We've been practicing it right from the start in the sense of utilizing a whole lot more resources. But if we get to a point where circumstances, not opinions, but real circumstances from the medical experts and those in the powers to be pointed out, then yes, we will reverse this policy at this time. But for now, at least through the end of December, we'll see what January brings us. Through the end of December, we'll probably continue with the shared rides. If anything happens between now and the new year, you know, I certainly will make it well known. But right now we see shared rides in a very limited fashion, supported by a lot of Metro Access vehicles and hundreds of taxis and Ubers, as our way of keeping customers spread apart and avoiding the shared rides.
All right. Thank you so much. Looking at the time, we do need to get to these other topics. So,
this is Vanessa. I'm sorry. I raised my hands once more.
All right. Oh, quick question, because I have to get on to these other topics.
Sure. Just concerning the seat belts, I know that it's not easy to cover them, but what type of cleaning process is being done to seat belts, and can we lower them to under our arms so that they're not touching under your chin? And really, I don't like them touching my clothes either, but just the seat belt.
That's a very good question in terms of the second question, because I go through this with my granddaughter all the time, every time she gets in my car. And so, but as a customer, given that, I mean, I'm gonna have to, I don't want to just blanket and just say it, but as a customer, given that customers have a right to waive their seatbelt, let me think about it. I don't want to make a rash answer, but I can tell you right now, there's nothing I could do necessarily, or even the driver could do to stop you. Now, of course, the driver could report it.
Well, they won't move if you don't have those seatbelts.
That's their job. So, yeah, we need to think about that before we make a rash decision on that. I do hear you. I know early on when we talked about cleaning, wiping those seat belts were part of it, but again,
so
that's what we do. That's just part of the whole overall cleaning process, generally speaking.
All right, we do need to move on. So next, we do need you, Mr. Blake, because I do have a few questions about the performance report. And or Ms. Williams Hall. So here are my questions. I'll just you know kind of read them into the record. So the first thing is, when I look at October's the October data for the performance report, I noticed that with missed trips, normally that would be 30 minutes or more, but that's not listed as what it's measured on. But you do list the measurement for excessively late trips, and that was listed every month. Why is it no longer listed? That's one question from the performance report. Also, I noticed a new measure about
the percentage of missed trips is on page 5.
Yeah, it talks about it, but it doesn't give the definition. In previous reports, it said trips that are greater than 30 minutes missed.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's missing. That's normally listed. Yeah, that's why I asked that question, because I see you define what late trips are in words, in description, but not that. And that was traditionally. The next piece is, I noticed that the number of complaints have gone up, but they're still under the 5%. Threshold, but they have kind of astronomically went up. What we would like to know with the complaints, what three major categories are they coming in that you are getting? You may not have that information now, but if you can give that to us by the next meeting, that would be appreciated.
Okay.
Because what I notice is it's a large uptick, but it's still under that 5%, desired goal.
But I'll find the exact categories as you requested. That's not a problem.
Because I'm looking at it going astronomically up, and I'm like, what is it because of shared rides? Is it because? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we'll give you the exact categories. But again, October 2020, we had very little ridership.
That was a pandemic, but I want to know for October 2021, what are the big rocks?
Listen to what I'm saying. We'll give you the specific categories, but October 2020, we had very little ridership, whole lot of resources, and 96-97% OTP. October 2021, we have shared rides, much more ridership, much more traffic on the streets, and the on-time performance is like 92.45. That's really the nut of it all. I mean, it's there's more ridership, therefore there are more challenges. It's not the perfect single direct trip limousine service. So you're going to see, I know you call it astronomical, but you're really not comparing apples to oranges, even though that's what we do here. They're two totally different types of services at this point in time. But I will give you the three categories as you requested. But anything that we compare to during the 2020 year, you're really comparing a whole different type of service than what is operating today as a shared ride public transit service in an environment that's slowly but steadily coming out of a shutdown, no traffic on the street type of environment.
All right. The next thing I saw was the new category of trip meeting fixed route equivalent. So if you can give an explanation of that and how that's going to look going forward, even though it is a new metric. And then I see the exclusions. And if you can explain those exclusions, that would be appreciated too.
Okay. So trips meeting, if you all remember, I did a presentation some months ago following an Office of Inspector General investigation that generated a lot of publicity, and I did the presentation that Rush finally called a very nice and accessible presentation. So I appreciated that. But one of the agreements we agreed to in that presentation or in that discussion with the Office of the Inspector General is that one of our new public-facing metrics would be this here, trips meeting the fixed route equivalent time, because one of the challenges we had with the customer who submitted the complaint to the representative who then brought it to Metro is that while they complained about, I believe, two or three trips, two of them were within the fixed ride equivalent time and did not necessarily, were not necessarily securitous. So we had to explain that. And we went through a lot of discussions with the Office of Inspector General. So what this means is simply, out of all the Metro Access trips that are scheduled, how many of those trips are faster or, excuse me, equal to or faster than the amount of time it would have taken that customer to travel from point A to point B on bus and or rail on the fixed route service? And our goal is to be at 90% of those trips. Well, our goal is always 100%, as I said during the presentation. But our public-facing metric is 90%. Our performance in October was 95.81. Trips that exclude were first, because we were just trying to get this and meet our recommendation from the OIG, trips that were booked via the website, but that's no longer going to be an exclusion moving forward. We finally fixed that situation. This called non-ADA trips, and I know if Doris were on, that would just make her skin crawl. These are not non-ADA trips. What it is that, as you know, primarily to help customers in Prince George's County, thousands of them, Metro Access has not shrunk the Metro Access service area in accordance with reduced service in certain areas. We've kept the Metro Access service area as is now going on. This is going on now three, almost 4 years. Well, if there is no bus service in an area, if there's no train service in a particular area, but Metro Access is still going out there to pick a customer up, well, there is no fixed route equivalent time for us to measure against. This is just so there's no way we can include such trips into this metric. The employee trips, those are people who work for Metro Access, no charge and no pay. Those are going to be included in going forward as well. And again, the variable fares and IVRs, those are just ways that trips are booked and calculated that at the time we said we would start this metric, we didn't realize could not be included. But these are very minimal numbers. The largest number of all of these here are the non-ADA trips. So we got to find a new name for that, though. But the non-Metro Access equivalent to fixed route service area trips. So that's too long.
So you're saying if someone like me who books trips via the website, which I do 99% of the time, they're not going to be considered as part of this metric?
You were not in October, but you will be going forward because we found a fix to that.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. I was like, whew. So I want to go back to missed trips. Again, the number in October 2021, while it's under the 0.75% of, you know, meeting the goal, it has gone up. And the concern for missed trips is, again, that means the customer is waiting at least 30 minutes past their window where there's no vehicle. What are we doing to address that, even though we have resources now?
Well, again, when you look at that number, it's under the goal. We want to be perfect. I mean, I'm not stating any otherwise. We want that number to be zero, just like we want late trips to be zero in all cases. The nature of this business, because even when we were running 97% OTP mm-hmm. and had a whole bunch of resources and no traffic, we still were at 0.33. So the nature of the business, all I can tell you, Paul, and Mr. All Chairman, right, excuse me, okay. is we don't want any. That is our absolute goal. But what can I do specifically to target having that number zero, especially when we're still under the goal? It's a challenge because anything I do for that will then create ripple effects. It's the old saying, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to make a promise to make certain changes to address this when it can have a bigger impact on a broader range of trips that will then create far more problems for customers.
And I guess now you're going with the industry standard, just to put on record, for on-time performance is 90% now versus what y'all had in the past, which is 92 point whatever percent.
It was 92.5, which related to our contract with the providers. But now let's be clear.
That's why I want clarity on this,
what I see on the report. Yeah, I don't know if 90% is an industry standard, because I know a lot of places where their goal is less than 90%. The reason why we said 90% here, and I didn't just pick a number out of the hat, this is all done by study. What I'm looking at is when I'm in a place, I hate to bring up a number, when we're here in Washington, we have the nation's finest, most accessible, and one of the most expansive rail systems in the nation. Rail is a dedicated right-of-way. But we have to somehow match that dedicated right-of-way. I've got to be realistic about that. Rail is a dedicated right-of-way where bus is not. So a lot of places just compare their paratransit to their bus metric, which could be any number. But we're sticking with our focus on the rail. The rail has a goal of about 90% on-time performance. And that is our aim, because even though we don't have a dedicated right-of-way, that is who we need to match, because so many trips in this system are on rail, and the fastest trips often involve the rail side of it. So we're trying to match rail, which has a dedicated right-of-way and 91 stations and hundreds of square miles, or thousands actually, versus a paratransit van, or now sedan, that has to compete with some of the nation's most congested traffic. So we didn't just pick that number out of a hat, and I don't know if it's an industry standard, but it's a very realistic and an ambitious goal when you look at the traffic in this region and the challenges of navigating in this region on a non-dedicated right-of-way. The 92.5 is a great goal. And again, I want to be 100%. Well, actually, my realistic goal, I want to be 97%. That's my goal. We'll see if we can get back up there. However, 90% on-time performance, given the size of our service area, and now a service area that even goes beyond the rail, 90%, in my humble professional opinion, is a outstanding goal for a paratransit service of this size and the challenges it faces.
All right. Any questions for the committee very quickly, because we got two more topics to hit.
Chair, Oscar and Ms. Rush, they both have their hands up.
Okay. So we'll go ahead with, who was the first person you said?
Phil Posner.
Okay,
and go. Denise
first. Okay, so Phil first, and then followed by Denise. And then we have to move
yes,
on.
Yes, thank you. This is just a question or some information for Ms. Williams-Hall and the new GPS software and system. There have been several articles written that there's about to be a switch from 4G to 5G. In towers and satellites. And supposedly the 4G GPS will not be working after 2021. So by the summer of 2022, any of the new navigation software we're going to install, we'll have to have equipment, the rangers or cell phones or whatever we're going to use, that is 5G capable. And that was it. No question. Just some information that might be useful for procurement to know.
Well, now that's fair, Dr. Posner. And before we even get to a possible new scheduling and dispatch product, we've actually faced this challenge with the Rangers already. And I believe we're either completing or we're in the midst of replacing, I want to say, 3G rangers with 5G rangers already. So that problem has already tested us, and we've gone through the process of upgrading our rangers precisely for the point you brought up.
Thank you. Well done.
All right, Ms. Rush, and then we're going to move on to the next subject.
Well, I'm glad that Phil mentioned that because that 5G is getting ready to shut down the airport. So I know we need to be updated because it's going to shut other things like Metro Access down. But we've discussed many times before about the 90% and the 92%. But what is on the paper? What is in ink?
Okay, so what is in ink for the contractors? What is in ink in their contracts is 92.5. Their job, the contractors, their job is to help me, help the OCC. Well, the OCC has the 92.5 in their contract as well. So all the contractor's job is to help me, help you get to where you're trying to go at 92.5% or higher. However,
and my job is to not let you just change it to 90.
I hear you, Ms. Rush, and that's fair. But that's my job to give them, well, they already had it, but they have a metric and a goal and a target that they must reach. And if they don't reach it, there are certain consequences they will face. As a public transit service, as a public transportation customer, our metric and our commitment to you, our official commitment to you is 90%, although overall, again, my goal is to be 100% on all of your trips and everybody else's trips, and that's what we're aiming for. But that is our public commitment to you as the customer, is 90%.
All right. Thank you so much, Ms. Rush. I'm going to move ahead because it's a quicker topic, and then we're going to end with the committee discussion. It's that time of year. It's December, and we tend to review it every year just for customers to know is inclement weather policies. Who would like to do this with me, Ms. Anderson or Mr. Williams-Hall? It's an easy subject because Metro Access already has, standard operation procedures.
Yeah, sorry about that. So I'm going to now, I don't want to postpone this because I think this is something all of us can.
Only Ms. because. Williams,
yeah, Ms.
Only
Williams
because Hall if we go into January, we might have snow before the next meeting.
Yeah, so Ms. Williams-Hall is out. But Ms. Anderson, do you want to take it or do you want me to continue my filibuster?
I think I can provide some information overall to the committee. Mm-hmm. And if there are some other items that we have to go back on, we can certainly do that. So can everybody hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So it is that time of year. With that, WMATA and Metro Access really have a well-developed severe weather planning and response process. Chair Semaford, I know we've had these discussions in the past, so I know you're very well aware of most of the general processes and planning that we undergo. Every year, really before the winter weather season and actually before even the hurricane season, we review our plans and we update them with procedures or whatever we need to do to prepare. In this case for 2021, we did update our severe weather plan both in August and in November of this year. WMATA has a very robust Office of Emergency Preparedness, which basically leads the severe weather planning and Emergency Operations Center team for the entire authority. And in November of this year, we actually, Metro Access participated along with all the other modes in a comprehensive information and coordination meeting so that we could better prepare and kind of get a read on the impending weather. The National Weather Service actually also participated in that information session. And what we learned was that according to the National Weather Service, they expect this season to be milder and wetter than normal winters in the past. So that's what we're hearing from the National Weather Service. So we always know, though, there could be a chance of something, you know, a severe weather event occurring. But right now, things point in the direction of it being somewhat of a mild winter. With a significant weather event, WMATA, along with other stakeholders in the service area, like the DDOTs, the Office of Personnel with the federal government, all the major transportation agencies, employers, and governmental entities all talk. There are various calls and planning that goes on amongst all those entities, of which WMATA and Metro Access are a part of. I know Mr. Blake is also a part of those meetings and discussions. And so we feel as though, insofar as our readiness, that we are ready to engage with any severe weather event that might occur. Let me say this as well. Metro Access, insofar as the service decision, when we do have a severe weather event, typically mirror those of bus and rail. But we also consider some of the challenges specific to paratransit, which includes, you know, accessible pathways for door-to-door service, unlike bus or rail, obviously, and also our vehicles operating on secondary and side roads, which are less likely to be cleared and maintained versus the main thoroughfare. So we do have some challenges that are specific to paratransit. However, our guise is to deliver service in a safe manner based on always looking at road conditions and other transportation conditions and to make sure that as much as we can, we're going to be out there delivering the service that our customers need. Mr. Blake, I don't know if you want to add anything additional.
Now, what I've seen with y'all over the years, which has been great improvement, is the communication to customers. Not only using the IVR as a tool, and now, you know, through your web book, you can see it printed for those who are able to access it that way. What I've seen that has improved in such emergency inclement weather is, you know, using the robocalls and picking up the phone, you know, if we have to cancel trips, not only sending out those mass messages through the IVR as needed and leverage that technology, but calling certain individual customers if it was that same day as best as you know, depending on, you know, staffing and things like that. And absolutely, really getting it to the customer so they can make the best decision, or letting them know there'll be no trip, or there'll be a trip within 2 hours, you need to be available, you know, if absolutely, it's really extreme. I've seen those things over the years and how y'all have gotten fine-tuned that.
And we also encourage our customers to sign up for Metro Alerts. If you're not already signed up for that, that's another communication tool that we use to, again, try to get the word out to our customers as to what's happening real time and any changes that might be occurring.
All right. Any committee questions, member questions before we move to the next topic with our budget discussion on fares?
This is Vanessa.
Go ahead.
So I wanted to, first of all, say to Ms. Allen, thank you to your OCC group for, I've experienced where we have been told to leave early and we am on my job and we have called the dispatchers and they have come back to get us early. In the past, that was a problem. And when I worked in the Arlington in the government, under the government, when the government was told they could leave early, we had to sit there and wait till our time. So that has changed somewhat, and I hope it improved, and I hope it something that you can continue to consider.
Well, I will say personally, I had a similar situation this year with weather, and I was surprised. I was like another colleague. I'm like, you know, they use Metro Access in my same work setting. We're not able to be accommodated. We had to wait, even though our school system said everyone needs to go home immediately. And Metro Access was accommodating to both of us in getting vehicles there as soon as possible, or an Uber, you know, after explaining the situation. So we know it's not a requirement. I mean, y'all not required to do that, but the way y'all were able to accommodate in terms of, you know, us being safe, we really appreciate that.
Well, we certainly want to, when possible,
if it's feasible,
try to accommodate. Obviously, if there's a severe weather event, we don't want our customers out there, nor do we want our drivers out there as well. So we're going to definitely try to accommodate where we can on that.
Who knows? Who knows? Same day service may be coming sooner than you guys know it.
Oh, that would be nice.
No, I'm just joking. Stop. Don't put that in the minutes.
Okay, so having said that,
the Blake business model is not going to have that.
So let's discuss fares. And then around about 13 minutes, I'm going to ask Anu if there's any public comment. And then continue discussion on this. So let's start this for about 10 minutes, and then new come back to me around 5:35 to see if there's anyone public comment. So I want to make sure they'll speak, and then we'll go back to this discussion.
Sure, will do.
All right, Phil, can you help me out with this?
No.
I'm sorry, are you at?
It's all yours. I can only tell you is there will be published hearings, there will be online surveys, and there will be local meetings. And we need to all show up and let them know what we want and what we need and why we need it. And so the best thing is the flat fare, which everyone has agreed to. Mm-hmm. And it's important because people need to know what they're being charged ahead of time so they can be ready to pay for it. So a flat fare would be number one. As to how much that fare is, it has to be something that's approved by the FTA that is also sustainable. And for a number, let the committee discuss what number they would like. And that's something that we need to talk about. And that is basically the flat fare. We've also talked for passes. And the suggestion was passes for subscription trips. And that is something that is a win-win for WMATA and for us. So that people are taking subscription trips for work, for dialysis, for sporting events, for theater events. If WMATA knows ahead of time that that's when the ride is coming, it's easier for them to plan a direct line delivery and efficiency of the service. So those are the three tops. Other things that I think you guys ought to discuss.
Now, the flat fares, is just this for the weekends or just this, is this across the board?
Well, what has happened, unfortunately, they have just approved continuing the weekend flat fares. They have not extended that to all flat fares. And that's part of the discussion. And at that discussion, I said that members of this committee, members of the disability community, customers of Metro Access would be showing up at every hearing to explain to them why it was important to have flat fares 24/7 for Metro Access. and that the amount of that flat fare just has to be something approvable by the FTA and sustainable for the system. But what they did at the last subcommittee meeting was to approve continuing the current things that are in place by the general manager, which is weekends.
So in other words, we are continuing to see, well, at least I see, the $4 flat fares that are going on for weekend trips, Metro Access trips.
Exactly, but we'd like it for the whole week.
Okay.
And we'd also like to get a chance for subscription trips to have a pass, which would be good. Then other things to discuss are going to be extension of bus and rail into underserved communities, because they have taken that as a priority, but they haven't said how or when they're going to do it. And the other question is for bus fares, which don't affect our Metro Access people because we ride free on the bus. But they're going
for
to
those who are rear,
but
those
they're who are going to go to rear door boarding. And on rear door boarding, the concept was that perhaps going to free fares. And the idea was to have the bus subsidized by the businesses and organizations that have their employees use the bus. And so for sustainability, WMATA may not be able to afford free buses the way they do in Seattle and New Orleans and other places. But if they get help from the business community, the education community, the health community, public service communities, where all of their customers and employees are getting to their businesses and to their work by bus, my goodness. Maybe they would contribute. So anyway, I've gone more than 2 minutes, so time to move on to other folks. Sorry you asked me.
Well, you know, we love your valuable input and kind of help the beginnings of spearheading this. And I don't want to talk forever on this point, but the importance of every committee member when these January hearings are announced and new gives us the information, we need to have all AAC members show up. I mean, since it's going to be virtual, if I'm correct, Phil, at all these meetings, it's now, hard to show up. It's no transportation issue. We need to all show up virtually to all these meetings. We need some kind of, I guess, script or talking points, hint Phil, or I guess myself, will help put together so that we're all talking the same points. And I can hear Patrick talk about this too.
Yeah, Paul, let me also add that it is virtual and you don't even have to be there. You can actually submit your comments beforehand, either written by email or by snail mail, and they will read your comment for you into the record. Or if you are skilled, you can actually record your comments on your cell phone and submit that, and they will play your comments at the meeting. So as easy it is being virtual, and you know, you just can sit at your computer and wait to go, but it's even easier than that if you want to. And as an example, you can just take time to go to YouTube and watch one of the board meetings and see how they run the board meetings. And that's exactly what they do when it's public comment. Somebody reads the written comments that have been submitted, or they play the recording that someone has made beforehand. Or when they get to me, they get me live. So you will have three opportunities to be at every single hearing that they hold. And that's going to be really important.
So we need you at all three. Me, I prefer live. You need to, as committee members, find your comfort zone. Preferably would be live, but if there's another mode that you prefer, then, you know, we respect that. But we all, the bottom line is we need all committee members to participate in this.
And all friends, family, and other people that you work with. We need bodies.
We need not bodies. Just
committee members. You need to bring friends and family with you.
Virtually, you know, if we need to help them on the computer, whatever, or help them, you know, understand things, because I know getting online is, well, I think a lot of people, some people still now have experience given the pandemic, but we need to get as many, you know, customers to get online as feasible to help support us saying the same message. Because what I've seen live happen at these hearings, when we lowered that fare from the $7 to the $6.50, that was because we stormed the Bastille as customers came to all the live hearings in person. And they made more of a majority than the as the disability community than the regular ridership. And I said, wow, there's a power in numbers. That's all I have to say on that topic. Anyone else wants to contribute to this discussion? All right, hearing no one else. Anu, is there anyone for public comment?
Chair Samuelford, we received no public comments via emails or phone calls, and I do not see anybody's hand up. No one has contacted saying that they would like to make public comments. Patrick Sheehan just raised his hand, and you just mentioned about receiving information about public hearing. Yes, as soon as the date and information is confirmed, I would share all that information with the entire committee. And Mr. Blake has his hand up.
Go ahead, Mr. Blake.
If you would, in addition to the hearings, also when they put things online as surveys to be done, if you could send out that information, that would be super. Thank you.
Yes, I would send all the information. I would send the link for the survey when it's available. I would send the dates, the timings, all the information, detailed information as it gets confirmed and is available.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
So just real quick, I wanted to share with you, thanks to my team who heard your request. And so I just wanted to share with you, they did find the top three areas of complaints for the month of October. We have 463 complaints for October out of, let's say, thousands of trips. And this doesn't even include the more than 10,000, probably 12,000 we put on abilities rise. So this is actually pretty good, but I digress. The top three issues were 58% of them, 267 were about a trip being early or late. Again, that is to be expected now. That's gonna be the challenge. A smaller percentage, 16%, but again, that's more than half of those complaints. And if you take a 92.45% OTP versus, or 93%, I think it was, OTP versus a 97, well, that drastic increase you're talking about there, you eliminate most of those with that difference, and then you will see that most of those go away. The next category in terms of number of complaints was 16% with drivers, complaints about the drivers. And then the final category, or the third category, with 9% were reservation errors, where we either didn't take down the reservation right, or they're saying they told us one thing, we said they said something else. But overwhelmingly, and as to be expected, with more traffic, more passengers and trips, and a lower OTP, that was the overwhelming difference between October 2020 and October 2021 complaints, the early or late arrival times. So just wanted to share that with you, sir. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. Patrick, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
We haven't heard from you.
No, I've been listening to this
all the conversations. Appreciate the 5G stuff, Bill. That was interesting. The other thing that was talked about by members of the board also was trying to encourage more people to come back to use the system. Fair simplification, I think, is one of those things that we need to be able to push as far as equity is or inclusion is concerned. So I think that those have been two concepts that they've talked about and they're moving forward with. And so I think that putting Metro Access fare in terms of that is important. The other thing, Phil, and maybe this is going to be a little bit more off topic, but I'm curious, maybe Mr. Blake or Anu or others know whether they're making some changes with respect to the websites and updating the websites at WMATA. I know the RAC had asked me for updates on what we wanted to see as far as improvements on the website. And we had not talked about that in a while. I think it did come up, the accessibility of websites with respect to Metro Access and others. Is WMATA, are they making changes, wholesale changes, updates on their webpages?
Did you want to take that, Mr. Blake?
All I can say is I know that the team on the webpage team is always looking at the, how do you say, the architecture, if you will, the design of it.
Yeah.
We've always been focused much more on the accessibility of whatever they do, and they work with us, and we're still working on it. So I don't think anything's been put under the table or what have you, but we're still working on implementing a lot of the recommendations we receive from the consultants that you all advise. In terms of a wholesale, look very different website, I'll make a phone call and find out, because even if it's accessible, that does, you get into a habit of knowing where to find some things, especially a challenging website, and then they change it. I will find out about that, Patrick. I've not been apprised to that, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's not happening.
Yeah, what I was concerned about, I know John Pasek was asking questions about the website and asking RAC for their, you know, top five issues or whatever. I knew, I think I sent you, or Carol, I think I sent you a copy of that. Phil, I know I sent you. And I was just curious, I didn't ever hear, or maybe I forgot or missed a meeting, where we talked about, did we ever get a contractor on board with, someone who was going to be implementing the accessibility changes that Columbia Lighthouse had, the contractors had put forward last June?
We don't have a contractor yet. So some of the things that have been recommended is being done in-house, but the big recommendations, yes, we need to bring somebody on board. And
quite
frankly, I'll just be honest with you. I have a limited support team in terms of my own team who interacts with procurement. And at this time of the year, we're trying to get advanced solicitation. We're trying to get the abilities right, contractors renewed. So it's just been taking some time.
Yeah, I understand.
Just as an example in usability and navigation, I spent a half hour to 45 minutes trying to find the performance report for this month for Metro Access, because the link is in small font, white letters, buried in a long paragraph when you try to find it. And the listing of the meetings and the dates is all someplace else, which is easy to find. But then once you're there, you can't find the recordings, and then you find the data and you find the. And so it's the navigation that really needs some help. And this is from someone that can see and also has a few skills. And so they could put things and links and, you know, more easily accessible or more obvious areas for finding information.
All right, and I see.
And I might go back to some of the frequently asked questions and make the answers to the frequently asked questions right up front. They've done very well. AAC and RAC and the others are right there on the front page, and that's easy to find. But then when you try to find other information within that, that's the difficult of navigation. So I'm just saying that to give you some examples to give them in putting it together.
Gotcha.
I see Ms. Rush's hands up, and Mr. Sheehan, did you still have another comment to make?
No, thank you, Paul. You've addressed this one fine. I understand resources and the scarcity around, particularly this time of year. Didn't want to miss the boat since John was bringing that up to the rack. I didn't know if we had a contractor on board making those accessibility, usability changes, but we'll be looking for them.
Thanks. Right. I see Denise, followed by Ms. Coles.
What is the update on the wayfinding information?
Okay, Anu, you may have more information right now. Carol Lopez is on leave right Chris, now. Oh, you're here.
I'm online, yes.
Welcome, okay.
Sorry.
Thanks for surprising me with your presence.
Thank you. Well, in reference to the wayfinding app, we have been working with Waymap to develop the first pilot. And they have scanned this. They have scanned the Silver Spring station and the Braddock Road station, and they're going to. They are preparing that particular station with all the information. As you know, the Silver Spring station has a lot of bus bays, and it's a large station. So they're working on that. And we should have something in the next couple of months.
Thank you.
Vanessa, go ahead. I'm sorry, I was muted.
Yes, hi. Well, I just had a question for customer service, if there's anyone that's represented tonight. I put in accommodation or kudos to Ms. Eula, who works in subscription. And she says every time I talk to her, no one said anything to her. And I did get a response from someone, but it was kind of generic. It said they will get in touch with the driver, but she's not a driver. So I wasn't sure that statement was made, but no one's contacted her to give her the kudos that I want her to have. So I don't know who I need to speak to, or do I send it in again?
Since you have Metro Access staff on the call, I think one of them, Ms. Anderson, or someone else in that similar department will follow up.
Certainly. Actually,
Ms. Kay Clark.
Kay Clark. Kay, are you on? I don't know.
I saw her earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I will certainly follow up.
I'm sorry. I'm here. I was trying to. Okay. I'm here. Okay. Yes, we'll follow up on that for you. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mr. Blake, is anyone from eligibility on the call? I do want to follow up on one quick point with the IDs, because I had I talked about it about a month ago or so.
Okay. Well, let's share your question. Let's see. Right. I'm looking to see. Somebody should be there, but I don't.
Mr. Johnson or the director. So my question is, I know we discussed the last time with IDs, because the Office of Eligibility is closed to the public right now, that customers who are newly eligible can use government ID, if I'm correct. Mm-hmm. Is that being communicated to the driver? Because what I experienced about a week ago, doing a normal ID check, drivers asking now, and all they check is most 90% of the time the name, but now one driver specifically asked me to take my ID out of my wallet and wanted to see the expiration date and the customer ID number, which a reasonable expiration date I thought was weird, but I'm thinking in my mind, and they're looking for a Metro Access ID, not a government ID specifically. So what are we doing to communicate to the drivers that during, especially this pandemic, there are customers who are renewing? And from what I saw from an email that I had an exchange with Antoine Johnson, that are they doing IDs now because it's saying that it may take about 3 weeks in the U.S. mail to get to you. What are we doing in the interim? You getting where I'm going with this?
Well, I got you. So part of the question of the answer to the question is not to do with eligibility. It's more to do with our contractors and them informing the drivers. I appreciate a driver wanting to be safe and wanting to, mm-hmm. to know who he or she is transporting, because that's in your interest as well.
Oh, yeah.
So that's not a bad thing, but yeah.
No, I'm just saying people are newly eligible or renewed who may not have a current ID.
We're gonna follow up with the service delivery providers. We don't have to treat a Metro Access van like it's the presidential limousine, but we want to know who's riding in our vehicles for everybody's safety. So we will follow up in terms of how they should present themselves to customers with respect to the ID aspect. But I want to make a slight clarification. The Metro Access Eligibility Office is in fact open.
Oh, okay. It's I didn't know this. So this is new news to me.
It's open for walk-ins and particularly for customers who are who want to use the Metro Access Smart Trip card on fixed route services. Those are really the only customers who absolutely need to come to the office right now, because everybody else's eligibility is being automatically extended. But if you're trying to use the Smart Trip card, you may need to come in and get a new card. If you don't need to come, if you don't need to use fixed route service and for free, there's no reason to come down there, but you can if you want to, because we are open and we've been open since the middle of September. But it's been just walk in the door. You can drop off an application. You can pick up an application, but we're not doing interviews. We're not doing functional assessments. Has nothing really to do with Metro Access eligibility. Anybody who submits an application is presumptive eligible until we resume full-scale interviews and tests and functional assessments.
I just wanted to know what's happening with IDs, given from what I experienced, the drivers are setting their mind to see a Metro Access ID, and we have people who are extended whose IDs might have already have been expired, and they're either getting possibly one now in the mail or, you know, are just waiting and don't want them to be, you know, what are the alternatives to identify themselves, or what is acceptable for now, you know, so they can board the van?
No, we're with you on that, and I will follow up with the companies. They're hearing your concerns now, so they should already be getting themselves together to talk to their respective drivers. But I will follow up with them as well to make sure we're all on the same page.
Thank you. And I saw Vanessa's hand up. Is there a question as it relates to this?
I had a question, but I think I can't answer it myself. I was curious about the move to the new location. When is that still in the works? But of course, with the pandemic, we won't be doing that anyway soon.
Yeah, we're still trying to get into the new location, but it's going to be a while before we get to a lot of you. I think the way we're probably going to do it, if you are already eligible and you went through all the regular routine and process, we will come to you later when we get to you. We're going to try to get through everyone who is a new customer and has been found presumptively eligible. We want to get through them first once we get to the new building.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Are any burning other topics of concern before maybe we can adjourn for the year? And I'm presuming, go ahead. Anu, I think you had to make your general. Go ahead, make your general announcement. Anu, I keep forgetting. Yes. Sorry.
No worries. This is about public comments. Anybody who would like to send their public comments can email us at metroaacthair@wmata.com, or they can call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Obviously, any members of the public who would like to make their live comments can also join the meetings and share their comments during the public comment section. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Thomas. I'd just like to say Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everybody. And I hope to see y'all next year.
All right. And Mr. Blake, I presume going forth until we hear maybe sometime next year, or actually this is working out well, we are going to be having virtual meetings through 2022 for the most part.
I think that's a fair Yes, I don't anticipate in-person meetings before the end of 2022. Anything can change, but I don't anticipate.
I mean, we're loving this because, well, we just need to stimulate more participation, but it's, you know, convenient for all parties to be present.
But I know y'all want to get back to those sandwiches.
Yes, no, we use one of the meetings to have people give their comments to the board as individual. Give them their 3 minutes to read their comments to the board, and then anew can break it out and can submit it for them for the hearings.
Okay. Are you suggesting that? I'm open to that. Are you suggesting like a special meeting that we would then just take the testimony and do that separately from an AAC meeting, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. We can schedule that, no problem.
Oh, that's super. Thank you. That'll make it even easier for everybody and the public. We can have our own
zero. Ms. Rush.
Merry to everyone, and we'll see you next year. Mr. Blake, I'll see you at the casino.
Oh, see, now she's turning it on me. Yes, indeed.
All right.
Happy holidays, everybody.
All right, I want to make a motion to adjourn.
Second. No.
All right, all those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
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 Meeting is adjourned. Have fun at the casino.